This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 119. And welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the ConcealedCarry.com network. I am your host, Riley Bowman. And today I'm also joined by Jacob Paulson.
Yeah, I'm here.
So today's topic is, actually, we're publishing an interview that we did at the NRA show with Rob Pincus. And I should say it was myself, since Jacob, you were sitting at home in your PJs while I was, busy at work.
Right.
Sorry, I got to keep picking on you.
You know how lazy I am.
But we had a few minutes to sit down with Rob Pincus and talk a little bit about training philosophy, but also about the Avidity Arms PD-10. So we hope that you enjoy listening to this interview together with myself and Rob today. And also, Rob's going to be joining us in this month's, which is this Thursday evening, Guardian Nation live broadcast. So we look forward to that. But first, today's episode is brought to you by Sig Sauer Elite Performance Ammunition. And I hope that if you're looking for high quality, affordable, consistent, and accurate ammunition that is also made in the USA, that you will check out Sig Sauer's Elite Performance Ammunition, available in FMJ target and self-defense oriented JHP rounds. Whether you're at the range or defending your loved ones, Sig Sauer Elite Performance Ammunition performs consistently between loads of the same bullet weight, ensuring that the results you achieve at the range are the same results that you'll get on the streets. Available at many of your favorite sporting goods stores, online, and especially through our website, concealedcarry.com/SIGAMMO, S-I-G-A-M-M-O. And today's episode is also brought to you by Guardian Nation and Mantis X. And so, without further ado, let's start getting into the content here for today, Jacob. And so, yeah, you weren't able to join us at the NRA show, which was, too bad. But I know you've listened to this episode or to this interview with Rob. And I'm curious, just kind of prep it for folks and as to what they might expect.
Yeah, Rob's a really smart man. He's been doing this for a very long time. And I think that he has been a pioneer in self-defense handgun training in many regards. I mean, he really has helped, I think, bridge a lot of gaps from competitive shooting to self-defense training. And so if you're not familiar with Rob, I think you have a lot to look forward to. I think there's a lot of things you guys discuss in here. You talk a little bit about the NRA show. You talk a little bit about the differences between training for competitive shooting versus self-defense shooting. And you also talk, of course, about the PD-10, the pistol. But what I would tell listeners is, as you're getting ready to listen to this interview, just tune in real closely, pay attention, and also be thinking about if you were there right now, what question would you ask Rob Pincus? Because as Riley, you mentioned, we're going to have him live this coming Thursday evening on our Guardian Nation broadcast. And so if you're a member of Guardian Nation, you can join and you can ask those questions and Rob will answer them for you.
Yeah, exactly. I really like how you put that, because sit there, listen to this interview together with myself and Rob Pincus, and think about what questions you would like to ask him. Because really, for just straight up, real life, real world self-defense training, Rob is the man. I mean, and there are a lot of great guys out there, but Rob Pincus is, I mean, he's honestly changed a lot of the industry single-handedly, as far as some of the ideas that he presents, his approaches to training, his combat focused shooting techniques, all of that he does, honestly, a lot of the way I do things and the way I think have been thanks to Rob Pincus. And sometimes without me even realizing it, that's a funny thing. The more I get to know him, the more I study his stuff, I'm like, wait a minute, like, I learned this concept over here. And I realized later on that, he kind of, I think, originated a lot of that. And he would probably say no, that he's really just presenting the facts and the truth, if you will, of training and self-defense shooting. He's just presenting what he's discovered. But he's really put it out there for folks through his TV series, YouTube, videos, his books he's written, DVDs that he's produced. So anyway, really great stuff. I hope you enjoy this interview together with Rob, and we'll see you on the other side. All right, so we're sitting here at the 2017 NRA show together with Rob Pincus and doing the show right here on site in the Eagle Imports / Avidity Arms booth. And great show. Hope it's been a great show for you so far.
Yeah, we're on day two, and it's been incredibly busy. You know, normally, historically, last 5 years, I've spoke twice a day with a 1 hour to 2 hour presentation, Q&A afterwards. And that takes up a lot of time. So in the morning, I go from like maybe 10 to 12, which means getting there at 9, you know, 45 and not leaving there till 12:30. Then I eat, right, and then I'm back on again at 1, from 1 to 3. And then I don't really get a lot of time to spend on the show floor. So this has been a new experience, really, in kind of from my modern era of the NRA shows, because now I spent all day yesterday. I was in 20 different booths. I had some great meetings. I get to walk the floor and talk to a lot of people. You know, we've been selling DVDs to the NRA community through the Personal Events Network program, right, since 2006. So, you know, something like 5-6 million DVDs have gone out just to NRA members. Forget about everybody else. So many of these NRA members, you know, they've seen my material, even if they haven't bought it or they don't agree with it, they know my face. So
yeah,
it's great. I can't walk down the hall without somebody saying, you know, every 10, 15 feet, it's, hey, how you doing? Or I get a nod, or somebody says, I love their videos, or somebody says, hey, I have a question about one of your videos. I didn't understand why you said that. It's great feedback for me as an instructor, as someone who's been in the industry now for 20 years, to be able to come to a show like this, which is consumer oriented. You know, unlike the SHOT Show or the Association of Sporting Goods Wholesalers Show or the EWA, the European SHOT Show, this isn't a closed show, right? This show exists for the consumers. And the consumers really are my audience. You know, I can have my business to business meetings over the phone or the internet or conferences, or fly out to a manufacturer's headquarters and talk to them, or somebody comes to a class in the industry, that's awesome. But really my audience isn't the business-to-business side, it's the people here, right, at the NRA show. So it's really, yeah, fun for me to be able to be out on the floor.
It is fun to see, because, I mean, like, you see families here. You see kids. I mean, your granddaughter just stopped by.
Yeah, and that's unlike unlike
she stopped by with her mom.
Yeah, you can get you know, you can be under 18 and be here, and there's, yeah, lots of families. You know,
it's fun.
It's been great.
Yeah, awesome. So a couple things we're going to talk about here today with Rob. And you're going to join with us on our Guardian Nation live broadcast.
Yes.
And so that's, folks, just so you know ahead of time, that's coming up this Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. And you definitely don't want to miss it, because we'll sit down with Rob over the web broadcast there. And we'll be able to talk, we're going to talk training. We're, yeah, going to talk preparation. We're going to talk the PD-10. We'll talk concealed carry, all these sorts of things. So everything that applies to our community as concealed carriers. So a couple things, though, before we get too far into it here. You were a judge on Night of the Saint.
Yes.
With, yep, Springfield Armory.
Yep.
I'm just curious to get your take on that and that experience, and how you felt that went.
You know, it was a lot of fun. It's not something that I've done a lot of, that kind of a thing where it's like, I don't know, a team building experience or a, you know, reality show kind of a thing. You know, if I've done that kind of stuff, it's been for, you know, big corporations or private groups. It hasn't been something we were going to do for television. And I've kind of, yeah, shied away from that, because honestly, you know, sometimes it's kind of hokey. And I think everybody knows that usually that stuff's pretty scripted, right? So that the antics are kind of created by the producer and that kind of thing.
Yep.
This was going to be something. That was my first question, is this going to be that? Because I'm not that interested. And I don't know what went on when I wasn't there, but when I was there on site, you know, those ladies were working hard. They were being pushed. They were being trained. They were being challenged. You know, there were a few little setup things. I mean, people that watch the show know that, for example, Eric Frohard, who was doing the instructing, they kind of, you know, he pretended to be the driver the first day. And then he just kind of asked them questions about themselves and started forming an opinion about them. And then kind of did by the way, I'm the guy that's going to be running your life for the next 2 weeks, you know.
Right.
But other than that, there really weren't too many, like, tricky gotcha things. There weren't hidden cameras. There weren't, like, things going on that the girls didn't know. It was they knew exactly what it was. It's basically a job interview. You know, they were all kind of competing to work with Springfield to talk about this defend, right, your legacy concept and what it means to them, and how that defend your legacy applies to everybody that may be a potential customer for the Saint. You know, so there was a lot going on there. And the way that show was positioned in the marketplace, you know, really caught a lot of people's attention. And obviously some people thought it was awesome and they loved it. Some people thought, what does this have to do with guns? Some people thought, what does this have to do with, yeah, ARs? And there was a lot of kind of like, well, why didn't you just tell us about the AR? We would have been excited about that. And I got to tell you, I don't think that's true. I think in today's market, there's lots and lots of ARs out there. I think Springfield saw an opportunity to talk about women as shooters, to talk about this idea of defending your legacy, to talk about family, yeah, to talk about the people we care about and why we own these guns. And I thought that was idea, that concept, the initial reason to do something like the Night of the Saint played out really well, because it got a lot of people talking and thinking.
Right.
The ladies were all awesome. You know, being a judge, You take me, I take everything into account. I may end up, you know, I work with Springfield too, so I may end up at a trade show with one of them. I may end up working with them. Somebody's going to ask me, how did she win or why did she win or, mm-hmm. or, you know, is she really a great representative of the concept of Defend Your Legacy? Right. And for me, it really came down to two options out of that group that I thought were ready and were good enough shooters and knew enough about guns and had the storyline and had the personality. And, you know, that was Kate and Tracy. They really yep. distinguished themselves. And but they were, you know, you couldn't have gone wrong. And obviously in the build up, there were 200 people that they basically started with pieces of paper, breakdowns, bios, about 200 people. And then maybe 20 came in to be interviewed for them originally. And Rob Latham and I didn't meet anything but the last six. So there had already been a lot of kind of weeding out of yep. the ones that weren't ready. Any of those six girls could have won and it would have been fine. But I thought that Tracy and Kate really distinguished themselves and did a great job.
Yeah. So speaking of Caitlin Ely, the winner of Knight of the Saint, I mean, so now she's going to be at least part of the Springfield Armory family, a face of the company.
Yeah, she was over at the booth yesterday, and I don't know, you know, again, I'm not a staff member with Springfield, really. I'm kind of right. like the same thing. I'm an outsider that likes their stuff and thinks they're great people and thinks they do good things. So I help them out with media stuff, and we do a lot with Personal Defense Network, where they're a sponsor of the Personal Defense Network training right. tour. And, you know, exactly what the future holds for Kate and what she's going to be doing there, I'm not sure how that plays out, but I'm glad to see her there because she is, you know, she's a mom. She's a shooter. She's an entrepreneurial woman. She's forward thinking. She's a great face for the community. And yeah. I'm sure that she's going to serve Springfield well being associated with that.
Absolutely. Knight of the Saint wrapped up. What are some of the other projects you're working on?
So, you know, always with Personal Defense Network, there's something new going on. Distance education has been a big thing with us. So we launched our distance education. I first started doing that in 2012, working with USCCA on the counter-ambush mm-hmm. project, kind of the old school way, you know, send out a box. The box has the DVDs and the audio tapes and the book and the workbook. And then you go online and take a test. So we started going into the online portion because you did your testing online for yeah. the counter-ambush program. Now we do that through all streaming. It's all streaming, PDF downloads. Yep. You go on to the Personal Defense Network website, and you go into the store, you buy your class, and then you kind of study on your time. People say, well, you can't teach somebody to shoot over the internet. Like, well, no, I can't. I can't diagnose. I can't fix problems. I can't do a lot of things over the internet. But what I can do is I can teach you the concepts and principles that underlie the way right. I think you should train. I can teach you about physiology, anatomy, neurology. I can teach you about behavioral psychology in the middle of a fight. I can teach you about physics. I can teach you about the engineering of the guns. We can talk about bullets. We can talk about how your hand should fit the gun. We can do all so much of it, right, yep. in that distance education model. And then, sure, you're going to have to go out to the range and shoot. But you know what? I've been putting out DVDs and I've been on TV show segments and all. I've been writing magazine articles. I can't teach somebody how to shoot through a magazine article either, but nobody has a problem with the idea that they buy a magazine article and learn from
yeah.
it. These DVDs that we've been selling, the video clips at PDN, you know, all the blog articles, this podcast.
Stuff on Outdoor
somebody,
Channel, too.
Stuff on Outdoor Channel, TV shows. But somebody may learn, we may get to talk about tactics, somebody may learn something right now from us. So what we've done now is Harvard teaches brain surgery, right? There are, I mean, you've got yeah. a course on neurophysiology, neuroscience, and neurosurgery through Harvard University online now. For doctors, right? Like, you can't. I can't take it. But this doctors can do it. And so if the biggest educational entities and some of the most respected educational entities on the planet are teaching big stuff through distance education, I think I can teach you about home defense tactics. Caleb Causey can teach you about how to put a tourniquet on. And you can yep. find value. Is it as good as hands-on training? No. But it's $30 and it's going to take you 10, 12 hours instead of taking and spending 3 days with us on the range.
Yep.
So and spending, who knows, $2,000-$3,000 by the time you buy the ammo, you get the hotel room, you get the plane, and you pay the tuition. So it lets us reach more people with good information. That's kind of the project I'm most excited about at PDN. And then, as always, you know, doing lots of live classes. I'll probably do, I don't know, 80 classes this year.
That's a load.
Yeah, about 50 of them will be part of the PDN tour. Maybe 60 will be part of the Personal Defense Network training tour between March and July. I'm going to be spending a lot of time overseas this year. Got a bunch of classes lined up in some other countries. You know, we're really pushing towards doing as much as we can, especially on the instructor development side, getting as many people teaching the programs as we can at many different ranges, hosting the classes, not for just for me, but for all the team. And eventually I'll stop running around 300 days a year, but probably not anytime in the next couple years.
Nice. You know, one of my favorite video segments of yours is some of the Worlds Collide
yeah.
YouTube segments together with Rob Latham. Tell me about those a little bit. And it's kind of fun to see you and Rob Latham interact because, I mean, two different worlds, hence Worlds Collide,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And we have a great time with it. You know, what we, The idea was, wouldn't it be fun if you guys got to kind of arguing, you know, go back and forth and banter as we do, because we're friends and we get along really well, but do it on camera, talking about tips, tactics, guns, whatever. And the fact is that we disagree about like eating habits, right, and fitness regimens, but we don't, fashion, but we don't really disagree that much when it comes to guns. There isn't much of an argument. There's not much of a collision when you put into context. If you're doing competition, this kind of gun makes more sense, and this kind of a technique makes more sense, and you're kind of silly if you don't do this when you're doing competition. But over here for defense, man, you'd be nuts to do that. You'd be ridiculous to have that kind of gun. Yep. And we both agree with that. And then some of the stuff I teach, you know, people don't really know, I guess, that he does a lot of teaching for the military. He does a lot of teaching for very high-end military and for law enforcement. He teaches them shooting mechanics. He doesn't really teach them the context. He doesn't teach them the application. He teaches them the shooting. What I really focus on isn't shooting mechanics. I teach application. So I talk about the context in which these shooting skills need to be applied. So we don't really collide as much as we do complement. So you got to have the mechanics, but you have to know how to apply them. And if you're only doing it in the competition way, I say like the range is a racetrack. And if you're going to have the car set up to win a track, to win the race, you're going to have the tires to win a track record. You know, you want to set the best lap time. You're going to drive in a way that's very, very different from how you drive every day out on the street. And in fact, if you try to, you know, cut in deep on that left-hand turn on the street, you know, on those back roads, you're going to run into a truck coming the other way.
Right.
You can't do it. So the range is a racetrack. So if you're trying to do the best you can on the range, you're actually wasting a whole bunch of time in terms of applied skills in the real world, because you're going to be chasing those tenths and maybe those thousands even in some of those timer drills. And all you're really doing is repeating a cycle that it becomes predictable, it becomes choreographed. You'll see progress, but you can't apply that kind of progress in the real world. So I think it creates a false confidence, it creates a distraction, and eventually it starts changing your techniques and changing the gear you pick. And I think Rob agrees 1,000% with all that, not to speak for him, but people can go look at the videos, read the blogs, they'll see. I think he agrees with everything I just said. He might disagree about the value of having those mechanical skills at a high level at a certain point. Once you understand the application concept, then why not go back and be able to hit a smaller target at a further distance? And I say, because it's not just about shooting, because you need your medical training, you need your physical fitness, you need your unarmed training, you need your maybe other defensive tools when you can't have a knife or a gun. There's other things to worry about besides just shooting mechanics. And if you're just going to be a shooter, fine, admit it. If you're just a shooting hobbyist, if you're a training hobbyist that wants to get a certificate from everybody in the world, great. That's a great hobby to have. But it's not the same as being passionate about being as prepared as possible for personal defense.
Yep.
That's a different thing. There's a lot of P's in that sentence. I don't know if I can pull that off.
You said it very well.
Thank you.
So what do you say to the people that, you know, might look at something like that as far as techniques that might be very popular in the competitive circuit? And, you know, competitive shooters, there's no value in that as far as taking some of those skills or techniques and applying them in a defensive world.
I think that's true. I think there absolutely is a truth to the idea that you can spend way too much time chasing some of the techniques. Like for example, swinging through multiple targets, clearing a plate rack.
Yep.
You know, unless you're being attacked by a bunch of gang members that were all just in like three-legged races, you're not shooting and then swinging 5 degrees and shooting another target right away. If it's like 3 degrees, you know, whatever it is, and shooting another target right away, like, that doesn't happen.
Yep.
The idea that you're going to shoot a popper, you're going to fire a shot. I mean, you know, you watch a guy like Latham shoot. I mean, he's knocked down the fifth or sixth plate, you know, and the second plate is still falling. Right.
Right.
So you have to, in the real world, you have to shoot and assess.
Yep.
So you can't just fire a shot and turn away to go look at the next target, because that guy might still be a threat. And in fact, the human decision-making process, collecting visual information, processing it through your brain, making a decision to stop shooting, and then that signal going from your brain to your finger to stop shooting happens, that takes more time than the average person shooting across their bedroom or around their car is going to get into that automated next shot, right? The follow-up shot. So once you've made the decision to fire a multiple shot string of fire into a bad guy's chest, you better understand that there's going to be a certain number of shots that go out. Even after visually, like on somebody's iPhone or on that surveillance camera, even after they start to fall, or even after they let go of the knife or let go of the gun. So the idea that you're going to do your fast double tap and immediately pick up another target and do another double tap, that only happens on the range. It only happens on the racetrack. So why is that part of a defensive training curriculum? Well, that's what we do. It's tradition. It's El Presidente, right? Which I say is irrelevante. right? It has nothing to do with, well, when are you, unless you're an assassin, you're not like picking your three targets and like you're going to act and shoot them before they can move and before things change. If you look at the dash camera videos, if you look at surveillance camera videos, what happens with the other bad guys when you start shooting the first bad guy, when that retail clerk pulls out a gun, what do those other bad guys usually do? Right? They usually turn around and run. They usually dive for cover. They definitely move, and they very rarely continue to be bad guys. They all of a sudden decide they want to retire really fast. So at some level, we're actually teaching a reckless use of guns. If we're teaching people to say, okay, there's three potential threats. I'm going to start shooting this one, and without regard for what happens next, without collecting or processing any information, I'm going to shoot the next guy.
Right.
You can't do that in the real world. You have to collect and process information. So your training model better include firing at the target, pulling the gun to a ready position, collecting some information, finding the next target, and then shooting. But you can't put a timer on that. Yep. How do you time assessment? So nobody wants to do it because it's not fun, and you can't compare your scores, and you can't put it up on the YouTube and say, look at my times, look at my splits.
Right.
And it takes cognitive energy. It takes discipline. And it looks silly on the range. It doesn't look cool. Like, there's a million ego-based tradition, behavior, complacency, momentum, inertia, reasons why we don't do it. But I haven't heard anybody give me a logical or objective reason why we don't do it.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
Yeah. You know, and that kind of goes back to what you were talking about, especially with the differences between you and Rob Latham, in that it's fine, I think, to do drills, of course, especially where the focus is increasing my skill as far as being able to put shots on a target and do so quickly when it's necessary. But then keep that in context, that training where for the real world, it is two different things.
And that's just it. So if we know that, if we say that it's different, why do those drills? See, I that's where I don't want to placate that and say, yeah, it's okay. It's still okay to do drills. It's not okay to do drills that don't fit your intended context of use. So if you want to be a competitive shooter, or you want to be a hobbyist, and you just want to have fun on the range, I have no problem with that. But don't tell me that you're out there training. Don't tell me you're out there practicing for defense. Tell me you're out having a good day at the range or having fun. I'll go clear a play rec. I'll shoot against a buddy of mine to see who buys the beverages at the bar after we get off the range. But I don't think that's not going to get me killed on the street that I take a couple, you know, runs through a plate rack or a couple stages at an IDPA thing.
Yep.
But if that's all you do, right, people will tell me, well, I'm doing IDPA as training because my range won't let me use a holster. My range won't let me move the gun in my hand. So I won't let me shoot multiple strings of fire fast. So I do IDPA for training, for practice. Okay. Let me ask you, what's your score? Because if you're coming in the top 20%, you're doing IDPA. You're not practicing appropriate defensive shooting skills. You're just doing IDPA. You know, if you're firing 3 to 5 shots in every target, if you're just shooting the targets in the order you see them, if you're requesting not to get a stage briefing, but just to go in and do what you need to do to find the targets and clear them, if you're using your carry gear, even though it's slower, right? If the range, if they will let you, if you're carrying appendix because you carry appendix, even though that's not allowed by IDPA rules, but they're saying, sure, you can do it as long as you're safe. But your score is not going to count, so be it. Your score doesn't count. I mean, honestly, if you're doing it right, the only person that you don't get beat by at the average IDPA should be the guy who got a DNF, right? The guy who didn't finish or the guy who got DQ'd. Like, those are the only people you shouldn't lose to if you're doing it right, because you're going to download your magazines, you're going to get surprise slide locks, you're going to throw a couple snap caps in there and have to do tap racks, you know, and people don't want to do that because of ego, because of behavior, because.
And it's not fun.
Well, it should be. For some people, it is.
Yeah, for some people. But I mean, as far as, like, it's not fun to – the competition's fun, but sometimes, like you said before, it's not as fun to train like the real world.
No, training is work. That's true. Yeah. That is true. Yeah,
it is a lot of work.
Yep.
So I think the difference here is that there's shooting skills and there's tactics.
That is a thing.
Yeah.
But there is – I think the real difference is where we're talking about this between, like, what – You see Rob Latham doing most of the time, and what I think Rob would recommend would be a better idea for people just interested in defense, or certainly what I would recommend is being a better idea for people just interested in defense. And what that would be is the working on application of skill as opposed to some high-level skill development. So once you think about it, the targets that we're going to shoot in defensive situations, chests and the center of the head. So you got like an 8-inch oval or an 8x8 box or a 10x8 rectangle in the chest, and then you've got a 3-inch circle or a 3x3x3 triangle, 3x3x3x3 square in the center of the face, you know, with the top of those shapes at the top of the eyes or right at the eyebrows or top of the ear. If those are your shapes, you don't need to be shooting at a 10 by 20 thing. You don't need to shoot an 8x24 thing. You don't need to shoot at a 1-inch circle. And think about distances across your bedroom, around your, you know, in your house, yep, down the hallway, around your car at the convenience store, parking lot, in the at the gas pump, in the store, 20, 30 feet, right? You know, maybe you're in line at the counter and it's 10 feet. So if you look at the numbers, the empirical evidence, what it says, rapid strings of fire delivered to the chest at close range, less than 20 feet.
Yep.
If you look at the numbers for headshots, they're incredibly low, but they're plausible. So that would be an alternative target area. Somebody has a hostage, there's bystanders, somebody's peeking around a corner, peeking over a car. We got to slow down, apply more skill, higher level precision. But if you're training for chests and heads at 6 feet, you know, full extension, you're not inside of 6 feet, you're going to do retention shooting. So yep, from 6 feet to 30 feet, you're covering the overwhelming majority of shooting situations. And that's not a high level of shooting skill. You don't need an aftermarket trigger. You don't need a $500 gun that you, yeah, turn into a $3,000 gun.
Right.
You don't need a match grade barrel. You don't need you don't need ports. You don't need a compensator. You certainly don't need a red dot on your pistol. You don't need any of that to do that unless you're incredibly unique, right? If you have a physical disability or a visual disability or vision, I'm not talking about your eyes are getting older. I'm not talking about you have mono vision because of LASIK. I'm not talking about progressive lenses. I'm talking about you really, like, you're basically almost blind. You can't focus on a front sight. If you can't focus on a front sight, we might need to do something different, right?
Yeah.
If you have strength issues, if you have coordination issues, if you have some like tremors, you know, post-stroke or a Parkinson's kind of thing, I've seen people that are exceptions to the general rule, right? But they are anomalies. It's not 1% of shooters. So when I see people telling me, well, when your eyes get old, you'll need big dot sights. Maybe, but you don't. But if you can read a newspaper, if you can focus on a normal front sight, the big dots are going to make it harder for you to be precise because it's that giant dot in a wedge as opposed to a notch and a blade. So yeah, we recommend a wide rear notch and a big bright front square that fits into the notch in the traditional way. You know, like a 0.18 rear for the people that want to be technical, and a 0.125 or a 0.14 front with a square painted into it that fits in that notch. And I've seen a lot of people come through classes who thought they couldn't use quote unquote traditional sights, that when they see that sight picture, what the sight picture that you get from that under those conditions, they're like, wow, I wish, yep, I didn't red Loctite that thing in,
yep,
you know, or I wish I didn't spend $700 to get a red dot put on my $500 gun.
Yeah. I like where that's going. I think we could explore that a little bit more in our live broadcast. Let's turn our attention now to the PD-10, Vidity Arms PD-10 pistol here. And we got it in front of us here, a single stack, 10 rounds?
10 plus one, yeah.
10 rounds, 9mm, pretty slim, nice compact package for what it is, but yet still very shootable. And so you brought up the sights. You got a nice painted in there square, nice wide square notch on the rear, just like you were describing a moment ago.
Yeah, those are the claw sights from Ameriglow. So I started doing the sight design with them in 2011, 2012. It's been a while now. So it's been about 5 years. They came to me and said, you know, hey, what would you do if you were going to design your own sight?
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know what? I love that big square you guys have called the Luma Square. I first saw it on the, I think it was the Cap sites. Who is that? Who did those? Is that Dave Spalding?
That sounds familiar.
I think it was Spalding that did those.
Yeah.
But I didn't like the that little yellow line on the rear sight because,
right,
the way that yellow line is, it doesn't touch the yellow of the front sight, so there's a black gap, mm-hmm, there, and you could get the gap lower because the bottom of the front sight it also is black, and obviously the top of the slide on most guns is black, so it's really kind of hard to gauge exactly where that goes unless you look at the tops of the sights.
Yep.
That's where you should be looking anyway. So the yellow thing down at the bottom doesn't make any sense to me. It's really, right, distracting. We need to be looking at the tops of the sights and make sure they're even across the top. So how about a plain black wide gap, and then a big square on the front, and then, of course, we put the claw on the front for that one-handed manipulation. So instead of a flat front, which, you know, anybody that's still got the Novak-style ramped front sights on your gun in 2017, I don't even understand right now.
Yeah.
I don't understand what you're doing. If you got that little, those little finger skateboards the kids play with, maybe you got that driving across your slide, you're getting some tricks off that. I don't know what you're doing with that.
Right.
But you need a flat front, and we actually put a concave surface that, you know, kind of has that claw effect.
Yeah.
And as you can see on the Vidity, obviously we're going to go with my sights on my gun. We had the serrations kind of match that curve as they come up. So that's why that's where the idea for the curve on the serrations came from.
I was actually going to ask about that.
Yeah, that's not ergonomics. That's just, that's aesthetics. You know, I always did like the scalloped look that some of the MPs have, and the aggressive scallop that the old Smith & Wesson 945 Performance Center guns,
right.
The kind of 1911-esque single action guns. I always love that scallop look, and you know, this is kind of our nod to that scallop as a big swoosh, but it does match the curve of the claw.
Yeah. So tell us for the listeners just real quick the inspiration behind the PD-10 and how we've arrived to it here. Now what we have in front of us is this is pretty close to production, isn't it?
It is. There's very, very little difference between the gun we're looking at right now and the gun that's going to come out. So the gun we're looking at right now does not have the trigger block safety, right? So the trigger block safety is over here. The one in the case over here has our 3D printed trigger block safety model that we've approved, and we're waiting on production there. And this does not have what I'm calling the slide lock ramp. So you see this little triangle here. Now, no one can see it. I know it's kind of hard on audio, but if you look at any pictures of the PD-10, if you look at the slide lock, behind the slide lock, just kind of cut into the aesthetics of the gun, you'll see a groove, and it creates a little triangle of space that gets very, very narrow back at the beaver tail, and then it gets about as wide as the top third or top half of the slide lock right behind it. That is actually going to be ramped so that it'll be flush at the back of the beaver tail with the frame of the gun, and it'll come out towards the distance that will make it flush with the outside of the top of the slide stop at the slide stop. And what that's designed to do is, we see a lot of people, like even me with the XDS, lots of people with normal size or larger hands with any of these little single stack guns with a high thumb grip, which people should have, they tend to sometimes ride that slide stop, and they don't get slide lock.
Do it all the time.
So that ramp, I believe, is going to solve that problem for a lot of people. It'll let you not have to have your finger floating out there, like pushed down on the knuckle of the support hand, so that your thumb isn't actually touching the gun. It will allow you to touch the gun and get friction and have contact,
right,
but not be pushing in on the slide stop. You'll be pushing in on that ramp. So I'm kind of excited about that. We call it a shelf.
That's
or a
cool.
Ramp.
No
one's ever done
anything,
it before.
Yeah,
no one's
yeah.
done it, and it's something that I think if it works, you'll probably see a lot of other people do it. I think our safety index point, I don't know why people don't do that. You know, the little groove we put where you put your trigger finger, we put a little pocket there that'll fit most fingers, and if not, then we're going to go back to the old advice of put your finger on the seam of the slide in the frame, or maybe you can feel the takedown lever or something like that. But putting your finger into that little pocket. It's funny, that's the one thing on the gun that's ambidextrous, quote unquote. You know, now, all my left-handed instructors, all my guys have been testing it. Not right shooters here, not right. He's local here. He was just standing in the booth here. He's from Atlanta. He's a left-handed shooter, been through lots of classes, teaches, and he just checked out the slide stop. This is the first time he's gotten to feel the production slide stop, and he loves it as a left-handed shooter. He doesn't need a slide stop on the other side. And in fact, he understands that propensity of anybody with normal size hands to ride the slide stop on these single stack guns, he's actually glad it's not there on the right hand side of the gun for his thumbs, right? So if you know how to run a gun, you run the gun with your middle finger, probably if you're left-handed, to drop the magazine, and you run the slide stop with your finger, and this is very aggressively canted out so that index finger can come up and hit it very easily. But the one thing that has to be ambidextrous on both sides of the gun anyway is this pocket for the safety index pocket. So what happens when a right-handed shooter puts it in their hand, if they have a really aggressive, like if they're the guy that wants to run the El Presidente really fast,
right,
if he's that guy, they're really aggressive, super high thumbs, really far forward with the support thumb, their support thumb happens to go into that pocket as well. So a lot of guys have picked it up and they've said, oh, you got a built-in, they call it a gas pedal or a speed.
Right.
Ramp. You got a built-in gas pedal. That's awesome.
I noticed that as well.
Yeah,
when I picked it up, I was like,
no, that's not what it is. But if you want to do it that way, go ahead. Go ahead. Make you do that, sir. It will make it easy for instructors to say, put your thumb here, and put your trigger finger here when you're not shooting. So
yeah, very good.
I think you'll see more and more companies doing that too, because it's free. Like, why not put a little pocket there and give the people something to do?
Yeah, totally. Awesome. So PD-10, I know we're getting really close to this thing releasing. What do you have to tell folks as far as when this is going to come out to market?
Well, it'll be hot. Right in America, it will be hot.
I think so.
It won't be cold. No, I'm sorry. It'll be hot off the presses, and people will be flying off the shelves.
I think it'll do well.
No, but I mean, as far
as cool
the
gun.
temperature in the climate that we're living in will be warm. It will not be cold. So before it gets cold, people are going to be able to buy this gun. Now, I don't know if it's going to be the beginning of the summer or the end of the summer right now. That's kind of final testing. Until we have it, it's just the process is for me, a guy like me with crazy ADHD and like cash and carry mentality, I want it now. I don't even want to. Amazon Prime is too slow for me sometimes, right? And they can get it to me sometimes that next morning at the hotel, it'll show up, right? But it's still too slow. When I'm in LA, you can go to the Amazon pickup place 3 hours later, and it's like, if I'm going to go somewhere and pick it up, why don't I just go to Best Buy and pick it up, right? Like, I know I pay 10% more, but I want it in my hands. I want to do it now. So there's been a lot of that. And Brad, our engineer, he he has had the hardest job. Not the engineering, probably is pretty simple for him, right? It's a metal, plastic. Like that. He hasn't really had any huge struggles where he had to call a friend, right? He knows how to build guns, but dealing with me, dealing with my, like, why isn't this ready now? I don't, you know, why can't we do these three things at the same time? It's like, well, we got to get this right, and then we get this right. It's been an interesting process, a learning process for me.
Yeah.
So I want it ready now, but I want it to work. And I want it to work more than I want it ready now.
Of course.
And that's the thing. So we are working together to make sure that this gun is as reliable as possible. There'll be hiccups. I don't know what the hiccups will be. If we knew, we'd avoid them. But we're going to try to avoid as much as we can and have the most reliable, dependable gun we can get that shoots well, that people can carry, people can afford, you know, under $500, $499 MSRP. That means it'll be less than that in the stores. Just really super excited about seeing the reaction to people. And people have shot it. We've been shooting them since September. So lots of people have come through classes or been down at my home range, Ancient City Range in St. Augustine, Florida.
Uh-huh.
They've been able to shoot it, just random people. Hey, Rob, you know, see you on TV or whatever. And it's like, well, come on over here and do me a favor. Put your eyes and ears on and tell me what you think of this trigger. Or tell me how this gun feels in your hand. And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we'll certainly get into a little bit more on our Thursday night live broadcast, as well as pick your brain a little bit more, I think, on some of the training aspects of, especially for concealed carry, which, you know, you're really big on. You're one of the greatest at it, I think, in terms of training people. So we look forward to having you on the live broadcast this Thursday evening. Once again, this Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Time for you folks. If you're on the East Coast, it's going to be 9 p.m. East Coast time. So anyway, we look forward to that. Rob, it's been a pleasure connecting with you here at the NRA show. Thank you for your time and for, you know, all you do. And we'll catch you next time.
Great, Riley. Thank you. And I really do like what you guys are doing with the Concealed Carry Podcast. Bringing information to people is I need help from guys like you to get the information out. Getting the information out, that's always been my mission. You know, and the business model will somehow revolve or fit into that. But I got to get the information out. So thanks for helping me do that.
Awesome. Great. Take care. All right, so we're back, Jacob. What did you think?
Yeah, I got a lot of good stuff out of this. I was thinking a lot about you know, the conversation you guys were having about competitive shooting. When I think someone made the comment, and I can't remember if it was you or Rob, but you both were talking about this, kind of almost the idea that if you want to train for self-defense, if you're in, you know, a competitive shooting league for the purpose of sharpening your self-defense skills, if that's your focus, you're probably never going to win a lot of competitions.
Right. Well, yeah, because to really win competitions, you got to game it, right? And the fact with real life, you know, real world self-defense scenarios, there's no way you can game those by nature of them being real world. So, you know, that was an interesting thing. And that was not necessarily something I was planning on getting into when I was interviewing Rob. But I was kind of fascinated with this idea of worlds collide, you know, and I had seen Rob Latham earlier in the day and actually seen him and Rob Pincus. And as you know, Jacob, we had kind of a little bit of relationship with them as far as they were both involved with the Night of the Saint production that Springfield Armory did. And, you know, we did some things with that through our channels and on concealedcarry.com. Did a little review video about it. And honestly, we think Night of the Saint and what they were trying to do was a pretty cool thing. Anyway, so I just was kind of fascinated with this idea. Like, hey, Rob, you're good buddies with Rob Latham. He's a all-out, you know, competitive shooter. Certainly, I think he'd probably fare well in a lot of situations if he had to use a gun and defend himself. But Rob Pincus is all about combat-focused shooting, which is his trademark. And what he means by that is you have a threat and you got to deal with that threat. And dealing with a threat is different than shooting steel plate racks or shooting poppers or double taps on IPSC targets, you know, and transitioning to the next one. And, you know, I think that was really fascinating because I am also kind of in this point where in my life and in my own personal training and background where I am very much a self-defense oriented person, but I've also in the last year or two started to get really into competitive shooting and trying to make those two worlds mesh is I think it's an interesting thing to consider. I mean, being a competitive shooter has made me a better shooter. Like, I'm faster and more accurate than I ever was, but which I think is a good thing. But you can't forget about the real-world defense stuff either.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. You know, this has come up on in a couple of interviews we've had with you know, high profile competitive shooters and in other places too, where there's no question that the skills translate. Right, the skills that you need and that you will build in a competitive shooting environment are skills that you need and can use in self-defense environment and need to develop. So the skills translate, but the game does not. Right, the attitude does not. The mental game does not translate perhaps the same. And this is coming from you know a guy who doesn't do any competitive shooting. So take everything I say with a grain of salt. But I think those are some of the takeaways on you know that I would see from that. Another thing I you mentioned Night of the Saint. It was really kind of fun to hear just now in the interview Rob talk about kind of his experience in participating with that show and you know that he really appreciated the way it was done in terms of it not being about you know the TV drama aspect ratings of the thing, right? They weren't looking for ratings. They weren't selling advertising in it, and so they just wanted to put together some legitimate good content material. And so that was refreshing to kind of hear him, you know, reinforce what we saw.
Yeah, absolutely it was. So anyway, it was a great chat with Rob. You know, this Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Mountain Time, we're going to have him on our Guardian Nation live broadcast, which we really appreciate him being willing to do that. He's a super busy guy. I know earlier in that day, he's teaching a course. And so he's going to probably be a little bit tired, I would imagine as well. Cause I know what it's like, you know, spending a day at the range teaching and getting done and you're mentally and physically exhausted. So, it really kind and gracious of him to join us for this month's Guardian Nation live broadcast. We would love to encourage all of you to be there and come with your questions and, to be there. I mean, you need to be a Guardian Nation member. So that would be kind of today's second sponsor message is about Guardian Nation. So here you go. I'm giving it to you now. You're not going to want to miss this opportunity to sit down with Rob Pinkus, see him face to face. We'll be there as well. We'll do a little bit of discussion with him. We're going to kind of build off some of the other things that we talked about in the podcast, I think, a little bit, plus talk about some other things. I mean, really, we can pick his brain all day long about how to train and how to prepare and how to be more ready for situations that our listeners and our everyday concealed carriers might encounter. But we're only going to have, you know, about an hour and a half with him. So come prepared, come with questions. If you got something you're wondering about, that's going to be a really great opportunity for you to get that firsthand. So also, by the way, today's episode is also brought to you by Mantis X, which being called the instructor in your pocket, Mantis X attaches to your firearm and sends real-time data back to your mobile phone that will guide you in correcting the most common deficiencies as a shooter. Tired of that grouping being too wide, too high, too low, whatever, Mantis X will be your new best friend. And it was actually really refreshing, Jacob. I'm just going to kind of deviate here a little bit from the usual message because one of our instructors, Rob, out in Ohio, he and I were talking about Mantis X, and he was like, this thing is so cool, you know, as far
and
as...
Once you've used it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It really changes... It's changed for me, and I think what he was trying to say is it's changed things for him as far as, you know, showing him things that he was not aware of before and made it, you know, more possible to diagnose things, little things. That's, you know, at first I was a little bit dubious. You know, we were at the range, right? We spent all day. We shot tons and tons and tons of rounds, and you tested it. I tested it. We had three other guys and shooters test it, and I was still like, you know, you might remember I was looking over your shoulder or something, or maybe I was shooting, and every time I would see what the result was, I was like, oh, that's bullcrap. Right? Was that not my attitude a little bit at some point?
Well, I think that you actually said the word bullcrap several times when I was calling out with what I was seeing on the app. But yeah, you were definitely a little dubious.
But my point is like, the more I spent time with it, and the more I got used to it, and the more I started really paying attention, it actually has helped me learn something about the way I was pulling the trigger that I never realized before, and I never would have discovered without it. And it wasn't until after we had already gone through that whole range day session with you and Sam and the guys, later just me playing around with it myself, I went, huh, wait a minute, there is something here. And some of the analysis that was coming up on the Mantis X screen maybe was not exactly what I was thinking, or maybe I was interpreting it wrong, but I later did learn something about myself that I'm working on correcting, and I think I'm getting better. So that's really cool. And so take that as my personal endorsement for Mantis X. Jacob, mm-hmm. I know you're a big believer.
You know, and I'll say this about Mantis X, about Mantis X. I really love that it will work in dry fire, right? We all know that most of us fire probably about 80% of our rounds dry fire and about 20% live. You know, Mantis X works on all 100% of all those rounds. So you can use it both in your dry fire, whether you're using like a cert pistol laser simulation gun or your real gun, and you can use it in live fire. And so that's something else that I'll just, you know, plug for Mantis X.
Yep. Yep, totally. So if you'd like to check it out, go check it out at concealedcarry.com/MantisX, M-A-N-T-I-S-X. I know it's kind of a weird name. It doesn't really describe what it does, but I don't even know if we got into that with Radican over there when we had him on the podcast as to, you know, what's up with the name. But what it is it is a valuable live fire and dry fire training tool that will help you be a better shooter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I already mentioned the Guardian Nation live broadcast with Rob Pincus coming up this Thursday evening. Do we got anything else we want to put out there for listeners, Jacob?
Well, you know, for those of you who may be local or willing to drive to Colorado, you and I are teaching a class. I think it's the first time we've publicly offered a class that you and I are teaching together.
Right. Yep.
And it'll be on May 19th, which is a Friday. It's a full-day class. I think we're going to go 8:30 to 5:30. And Guardian Essentials Pistol. And this is a really exciting curriculum. It's all about self-defense, pistol shooting. And the crazy thing is we will literally pay for your ammo, buy you lunch, and give you $50 to take this class.
That's right. Yeah, that is kind of crazy. But, you know, we really want it to be an awesome experience. We want it to be a full service experience too. So it's like, you know, show up. I mean, yeah, bring your gun, bring a holster. But other than that, and bring some mags. But other than that, we want it to be full service. So show up. Don't worry about anything else. You know, I should clarify that right now we are only able to offer or provide the ammo for a 9mm.
True.
You know, down the road, I would love to say that, you know, changes or whatever. Like, it'd be pretty cool if we could do 45 and 40 and all that as well. It gets a little more challenging because, you know, more calibers and also more cost. But we want you to show up and have fun, but also get really, really excellent training. And here's the thing. We've spent a long time now putting this together and really working on it to make sure it's right. And that's why this is the first time you and I, Jacob, have ever, you know, have done a course together quite like this, because we wanted to get it right. And so a lot of studying, a lot of preparation, a lot of, you know, working and reworking and revamping the curriculum. And this is going to be a new thing going forward. I think it's going to be really exciting. It's going to change a lot of the face of our company and really up the level of quality of training, as well as just content. Like, there's a lot of things we're going to cover in this course that we've never covered in any of our other courses. So it's going to be a really great mm-hmm. time. And like I said, all you got to do is show up, have fun, get excellent training, enjoy some delicious food, and great association with gun-loving folks.
Yep. If you are in a neighboring state, if you're not that far and you're willing to drive to Colorado, send us an email too. And we'll see if we can't, you know, help you out in that regard. As far as, you know, if you need to get your hotel, you know, we probably won't pay for it, but we can help you find a cheaper one. And I don't know. I got a spare bed.
Oh boy.
It may require an in-depth interview before I let you sleep in my house. But the point is, you know, if you're not too far out, you don't rule us out. You know, we'd love to have you drive in.
Absolutely. And this is out east of Denver, about an hour east of Denver, which actually, when you think about it, is not that far from Kansas and Nebraska.
Or the airport, for that matter. The Denver airport is almost in Kansas.
So. Right. So anyway, if you're anywhere in the area and you'd like to come in on the 19th of May, it's a Friday, and it's a full-day course, our Guardian Essentials Pistol course. We'd love to have you there. So check it out. You can go to – what's a good link for that, Jacob?
Oh, geez. You know what? Go to concealedcarry.com and go to the shop. And then search by category, and there's a category that just says firearm training, and that's the fastest way I could think to tell you to find it.
Cool. So, or you know what, send us an email. You know what, you can go right to our website, hit contact, shoot us a message, we'll get you set up, no problem at all. So anyway, Well, with that, it's time to sign off, but I did want to make sure we did one little kind of shout out, if you will, kind of a review sort of thing, which, you know, listeners, longtime listeners know that we've done this for many, many, many episodes. And this one goes out to, I think it's Jorge, right? Hold on. How did I close that screen? So Jorge left us a nice comment on one of the episodes of the podcast. And he said right off the bat, he said, "Riley, you have failed to educate us on root beer."
That's right. That's right. Here I am trying to tell you to shut up about your root beer. And Jorge just wants you to talk more about it.
So, yeah, I'm sorry, Jacob. You know, I think it is now a thing.
That's what you intended, I'm sure.
Today's root beer is Bundaberg. In case you're wondering, Jorge, there you go, Bundaberg. Jacob, you're familiar with that one, and that's it's an interesting root beer, isn't it?
Yeah. It is different.
It's an Australian root beer, and I have tasted nothing else quite like it before. And the first time you have a sip, you're like, I'm not sure I like that. But there's some, I don't know, I can't even put it in words, but for some reason I keep coming back to it. So anyway, Jorge, I appreciate your comment. He said, "I need to go check out gourmetrootbeer.com, which is a site I have been on before. It's been a while, so I appreciate you reminding me of it. And I've got some things on order I want you to know, so hope you enjoy." But also, Jorge said, "On a more serious note, you should consider including a short bio of instructors." We'll see. I mean, that's something, you know, maybe we'll do that. So I appreciate the feedback. You know, he appreciates Jacob and Matthew and Greta being on the podcast, talking about all the different things we do. And actually, speaking of Greta, we've missed her for a while. Don't know for sure when we'll next have her on, but it's something we're working on. So anyway, Jorge, thanks for supporting the podcast. And thanks to all of you that do support the podcast and making it possible. We really sincerely appreciate it. With that, it's time to wrap up. We appreciate you again, and we look forward to seeing you in the live event Thursday evening. It must be Monday, Jacob. I'm having a hard time getting the words out of the mouth today.
No kidding. Did you need me to start talking?
You can talk all you want, but we'll see you Thursday evening, 7 p.m. Mountain Time, for the Guardian Nation live broadcast. If you're not a member of Guardian Nation, go check it out now, guardiannation.com. A lot of wonderful reasons as to why to be a Guardian Nation member, including our quarterly gearbox that's going to go out here very soon. If you're just barely signing up, you're not going to qualify in time for this box, but you'll get the next one for sure. But most importantly, you're going to have the opportunity to get hands-on, direct, face-to-face knowledge and education and training with guys like Rob Pincus and others in our live broadcast events. So we look forward to seeing you all very soon. Take care, train hard, be safe, and we'll see you on Thursday. And also, don't forget Wednesday's episode of the podcast, which, a little tease, we will be having Chris from RAND CLP on. So that'll be interesting. So enjoy, stay tuned. We'll catch you later.
That laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. The Concealed Carry Podcast, Concealed Carry Inc., ConcealedCarry.com, and their affiliates strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in this podcast.